2. Johnny had gone on his trip to look at bases, but he found himself looking at people. The flight had been pleasant enough. A new pilot had thought he would be flying Johnny, but the very idea of having to be flown about amused him. He didn't have a broken arm. But an escort of 3 Mark 32 battle planes, long-range ones that also were designed to carry a squad of Cyclomarines or employees, got into the air behind him when he took off and stayed right with him. He had flown northeast over Africa, the Red Sea, and the Middle East, and into Russia, making good time 200,000 feet up, and looking for a pattern of lakes and rivers Colonel Ivan had showed him with a finger in sand. He had expected to find snow, but although it was late autumn, the only snow was on towering peaks below and to the east. He found his landmarks, found his pre-planned landing space, and found himself in the middle of a sea of surging people. Colonel Ivan was holding them back with a dozen mounted lancers so that he had a place to land. There must be 500 people in that throng. He opened the door and was blasted with sound. They were cheering themselves hoarse. He couldn't even understand what they were saying. Such were the rolling waves of sound. He couldn't really distinguish individual faces among so many. Colonel Ivan dismounted as Johnny got down from the plane. The colonel was a little stiff and too formal, thinking possibly Johnny blamed him because of Biddy. The colonel was wearing a black band around his sleeve. But Johnny threw an arm around his shoulders, and it was abruptly all right. They had brought him a horse, a golden-colored stallion with a sheepskin saddle, and he swung up. The crowd cheered. He only knew one word of Russian, and that was «Здравствуйте», which meant «How do you do? Hello». So he called it loudly, and the crowd cheered. Johnny looked around. They were close to, in fact right up against the mountains, fairly high mountains, 14,000 feet. They had snow on them. The ancient Russian base must be nearby. He had thought they would go right to it, and he could get his observation and estimation done right away. But no, everybody seemed to have other ideas. There were some skin and felt tents, and fires put their smoke in the air, and suddenly Johnny realized this crowd was in their best clothes. This was a holiday, and the way they pressed in upon him, he certainly was the reason. He wondered fleetingly whether Thor had been up here, for if he had, then a lot of these people would think he knew them. Well, his one word of Russian would have to get him by. The colonel's horsemen were opening the way. Every time Johnny raised his hand and nodded, there was a new ear-bashing burst of cheering. Colors, faces. He knew the sound of Russian well enough to know it was Russian, but he was also hearing scattered words like Bravo! And Bueno! And Viva! Sounded like llaneros. Yes. There was a flat-crowned black leather hat, several of them, and some huge straw hats. The smell of roasting meat and the tang of dung fires was in the air. A band made up of balalaikas and Spanish guitars and Andean flutes and Mongol drums was splitting the air. The colonel got him to a skin tent that had been set up for him, and with a final wave of the hand and his one word of Russian, now no longer adequate, he got inside. A coordinator had also come in, and through him Johnny wanted to know, couldn't they go to the base now? The colonel was aghast. Yet, yet. There was time for all that. One had to think of the people. Many of them, in fact most of them, had never met Johnny before, had never even seen him. Johnny said he was thinking of the people, to get them safe from possible harm. Well, harm was always around, according to the colonel. But not every day was an opportunity to meet Johnny. Vienna? Right? At that, Johnny was glad to get out of his heavy flight suit, for it was much less cold here than he had thought. The colonel had brought his kit in, but he ignored it. He had a near-white buckskin suit he had had made, not quite like the one on the credit banknote. Those loops there on each side of the breast were cartridge loops. But the village girls had done very well. Those moccasins should fit, but here were some military boots and red baggy pants if he preferred. This gold helmet? Well, it wasn't really gold. It was a lightweight Russian helmet, armor-proof aluminum, no less. And somebody flying through here had taken it down to the old mine site at Grozny and plated it with beryllium. See? It didn't have any star or ornament on it, but this chin strap with the heavy ear pads and the colored beads all over it had been done by one of the Siberian tribes. And wasn't it nice? And besides, Dr. McKendrick had told Johnny to be careful of his head after the fractures. So wear it. Johnny said he couldn't hear with it buckled. Wear it. Johnny washed his face and got dressed and told the colonel he was a bully, and the colonel confessed he was far worse than that. It was this way. His original plan to have Americans man this base had been passed by the old council before it went funny. They'd recruited some South Americans and sent them over. But there was a tribe up in the Arctic descended from political prisoners in Siberia, and they spent most of their time starving to death. So they had come down, en masse, dogs and all, and they were here. The Siberians were the ones out there in white bearskins. And then there was a little tribe they'd found in the Caucasus that had survived, and they were here. So it really was getting pretty manned up with Russians. But they had an American here. Yes. You want to see? He's right outside. The American was ushered in, and he was pulling a young girl behind him. He stood there grinning. It was a boy from Johnny's own village, Tom Smiley Townsend. They were very glad to see each other. Tom Smiley was a big lad, almost as big as Johnny and a year younger. He said he had graduated from machine school and heard they didn't have enough operators over here for this job and had caught a ride. And he'd been working here for over a month running minesweepers and teaching others and fixing things that broke down. This was his girl, Margarita. Margarita, permíteme presentarte al gran señor Johnny. The girl was very pretty, very shy, and overawed. Johnny bowed. He had seen Sir Robert do that. And she bowed. Tom Smiley said they were going to get married in a few weeks. And Johnny said he hoped they had lots of children. And Margarita blushed when Tom Smiley translated it, but nodded her head with enthusiasm. For the first time, Johnny learned the village had been moved. Tom Smiley had been trained so he could keep the passes open in winter using a blade scraper, and they wouldn't have the usual winter starvation. But now that they were moved, there was less snow. It was to the town Johnny had recommended, but Brown Limper had sent troops to force them to go to it. They had even had to leave their belongings behind. But he thought by now the other boys, two more were machine operators now and two were pilots, would have collected those up for them. The colonel pushed them out and gave Johnny a sip of the finest vodka ever brewed, and it almost took the top off Johnny's head. What a cure for flight fatigue. Must have been out of bear's teeth. The colonel said that was absolutely correct. How did he guess the formula? And took him outside again.